welcome to episode 57 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me again, co-host RJ Anderson. RJ, we are, as we record this, the day before the opening of the baseball season. I feel excited. How about you?
Of course.
All right. Excellent. Yeah. No, of course we're excited. This is going to be the second part of our off-season wrap-up slash season preview, where we look at all the major moves that each of the teams have made going into the 2018 season, talk a little bit about our expectations for how they'll perform in 2018, our favorite moves, our least favorite moves, anything that we may not have covered on previous shows. We're wrapping it all up today with the second half of that, which is covering the National League after yesterday's American League show. Now, you'll probably be hearing these two shows back-to-back posted on Thursday, so for all of you listening, happy opening day, and hope you enjoy this content. RJ, are you excited to cover the NL?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up an American League fan, but, you know, I've come to appreciate the National League style baseball, and I also think that, frankly, the National League races might be a little closer this year. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I definitely think that the National League West, which is going to be the first division that we cover, might be the best division in baseball. And so I think that that'll make some of the races a little bit closer. But on the other side, you've got the National League East, which might be the worst division in baseball. I don't know. So, you know, it'll give your favorite, the AL Central, a run for its money, I think. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff to talk about in the National League, and the top tier of best teams in the National League, I don't know if they quite separate themselves the same way the top tier of teams in the American League does.
Yeah, I guess that's fair to say, because, you know, in the American League you have the Yankees, the Astros, even the Red Sox and Indians, and in the National League you have the Dodgers, obviously, but beyond that, I guess you kind of turn to, would you say, the Cubs and maybe the Nationals? Because, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess you'd include them. So, yeah, I think there's definitely at least one more super team, so to speak, in the American League. And then in the National League, you have a bunch of teams that are trying to join that tier.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the American League, I feel like the teams are maybe a little too flawed to join that tier.
Right, yeah.
But I could be misreading the situation here.
Yeah, so we'll kick things off, like I said, in the National League West, and I think we'll kick it off with the, I would say, one of, if not the most interesting team in baseball in 2018, a team that I'm really interested in following this year, a team that's kind of surprised everyone by getting into the wild card and then winning the wild card play-in game, and that's the Arizona Diamondbacks. They had an incredibly active offseason. The offseason was kind of marred by the loss of J.D. Martinez, who was a very dynamic player for them at the end of 2017. But they brought in some supplemental pieces to adjust. They brought in Steven Souza via trade from the Rays and Gerard Dyson to perhaps take his spot in the outfield in the aggregate. They brought in Devin Marrero recently on a deal from the Red Sox. They brought in Alex Avila to be their new starting catcher. And then they upgraded the bullpen. They definitely made an effort to improve there by adding Brad Boxberger in a separate trade with Tampa Bay. He'll be the closer, it looks like, to start the season. They signed Fernando Salas as a free agent, and they imported Yoshihisa Hirano from Japan. So they made moves. It's definitely not that they had a quiet offseason, but with the loss of J.D. Martinez, I don't know if this team is better than it was last year. I'm kind of torn.
I am shocked that you mentioned Fernando Salas about, you know, coughing or otherwise retching or something. But so far as being better than last season, I'm not sure either. I don't know if that's necessarily the standard that's going to take to get them into the postseason, however. And I do think this is a good team on paper. You know, Avila is an interesting addition behind the plate. In theory, he can be an upgrade over the Iannetta Mathis platoon or, you know, arrangement they had last season. In practice, I'm really kind of concerned by his durability, which maybe that's unfair at this point, but you know, there's easy to see a scenario here where Jeff Mathis and John Ryan Murphy are starting behind the plate for them for, what, a month or two?
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I'm not really a fan of having to rely on Jared Dyson as much as they're going to have to rely on him in the early going. And I know Steven Souza played in a career high amount of games last season, but he's always struck me as someone who's not really reliable from a durability perspective either. I feel like I've seen him grab his hand or his wrist or his arm more than any other player in baseball. And I'm not joking when I say that, even though I've only watched him for what, 2 or 3 years. So that's an interesting dynamic. And I will say that this team, it's really interesting how they built their bench because they go defense heavy on the bench. And we kind of talked about this off the air yesterday, but their bench right now projects to be Jeff Mathis, John Ryan Murphy, Devin Marrero, Daniel Descalso, and Chris Owings. And basically every one of those guys is known foremost for their glove. So it's interesting how they embrace that because this is a team that figures to platoon at least one or two spots. And yeah, it's an interesting arrangement. Obviously, their lineup is going to mash or should mash. You have Paul Goldschmidt, AJ Pollock, Jake Lamb. I think David Peralta is underrated. I also really like Ketel Marte. I think he's at least to watch. I don't know if he's necessarily ever going to be a good player statistically, but he has that D. Gordon, Javier Baez like flair to his game, and I think he's like the most likely player on this team or on basically any team that doesn't employ Javier Baez to make this, flashy defensive play that everyone's talking about for days afterward because he's just a freaky deaky athlete, and I really enjoy watching him play, even if he's not the best statistical performer.
Yeah, I got a lot of questions about the bench. Like you said, the lineup is really pretty good. I do see Avila actually as a downgrade from Chris Iannetta. I would have rather seen from the Diamondbacks' perspective them keep Iannetta because I think that Iannetta's offensive skill set is more reliable than Avila's, which is kind of batting average driven, and I like Iannetta's approach. I always have. So I see that as kind of a downgrade. I see the right field situation from Martinez to Souza, who you mentioned he gets injured all the time. He's injured to start the season. Not exactly a sign of good news for them. I see those downgrades, but their starting lineup's very good. Their rotation is, I think, one of the best in the game right now, which is kind of a crazy thing to say when it's led by guys like Patrick Corbin and Robbie Ray, in addition to Zach Greinke. And I don't know what to make of Taijuan Walker's second half last year. I thought it was pretty good. If he can stick around, I have good feelings about that. Zach Godley, I expect to regress, but they have a legitimately really good rotation. They've upgraded their bullpen. The only thing I worry about with this team is they've got some potential injury issues, and they don't have anybody who can hit on their bench. Given the structure of this team, those are pretty small nits to pick. I still would definitely have them as my first wildcard team in the National League, but they're not a juggernaut, and they still have room where they could have improved, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Walker is interesting to me because, we waited for him to break out and become this frontline starter for years, and maybe those expectations were a little unfair to him. However, you look at his career, and, he's actually been better, I think, than most of us realize. For his career now, he's running a 105 ERA plus, a strikeout to walk ratio near 3, which results in a 4.22 FIP. I mean, is he ever going to throw 180 plus innings? Seemingly not in the picture anytime soon. I don't know. With the changing landscape of the game, it's possible that's not even the goal anymore. But, for 3 seasons now, he's thrown at least 130 and he's topped 150 in 2 of those. So, if this is what he is, a guy who's not necessarily going to work deep into games, but who can give you league average or better production, then that's a pretty good career outcome for him, considering the attrition risk with pitchers who reach the majors at 20 and who are kind of thrown into the fire when they're 21, 22. So I think he's actually turned out a little bit better than I expected him to. And maybe I'm just buying it in too much, like you said, on that second half and what he did last season. But I think I had underrated him because when that trade originally was made, I was like, oh, Walker's kind of a tease. I don't really know if he's, worth hyping up or whatever. And yet here he is a year later, and I'm saying maybe he's a little underappreciated for what he's done. So it's funny how time works.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been a little over a year, year and a half since that trade was made, but already looking back at it in hindsight, boy, is that an interesting deal. The way that Segura went to the Mariners and Mitch Haniger went to the Mariners and Walker and Ketel Marte came back to the Diamondbacks. I think even though Segura has been quite good, I think the Mariners would probably want that deal back because of Walker.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think that has to do with obviously how the teams are constructed. Because in a vacuum, I would say right now this deal looks like what a win-win for both sides, right? Because you know, the Diamondbacks just locked in Marte, Walker. Again, he's a part of this rotation, probably their third best starter, maybe their fourth best starter if you're very high on Godley or Corbin. And you know, Segura is a good player, and of course the Mariners locked him up. So I think it's probably, I think it's fair to say it's a win-win in a vacuum. But I understand, you know, if you're looking at the layouts of these teams right now, suggesting the Mariners would probably rather have Walker and Marte than Segura and Haniger. Of course, though, I would also note if you take Haniger away from the Mariners, they have exactly zero good outfielders.
Hey, that's pretty mean to D. Gordon. I think D. Gordon's a pretty good
outfielder.
Oh, sorry.
You know what? Sorry. You're right. One good outfielder, D. Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, it's still not good, but yeah, we got to respect D a little bit.
Always got to respect the D.
On that note, let's move on to the other wildcard team in the National League from last year, the Colorado Rockies. As far as their moves go, we already mentioned Chris Iannetta moved addresses on the West Coast. He's the new catcher for the Rockies. The only other really major position player move that they made was the shocking re-signing of Carlos Gonzalez. I thought for certain that he would be long gone from Colorado after last season. Turns out that given how bad the market was, a reunion was something that worked out for both teams. They did spend huge to upgrade their bullpen. They brought in Wade Davis to close. They brought in Brian Shaw from Cleveland, the rubber-armed righty. And then they brought back Jake McGee on a big deal. So the Rockies really invested heavily in their bullpen and looked to bring back otherwise much the same team that they had last year. Maybe with the addition of Ryan McMahon in the infield regularly in place of Mark Reynolds. Do you think this team's headed back to the playoffs?
I think I had them finishing fourth in the division. I just really wanted them to go out there and get another bat, and they didn't do that. I don't qualify Carlos Gonzalez as being what I wanted from them. I think his name value has exceeded his production for a few years now. Not to say he wasn't, you know, a decent and good hitter in 2015 and 2016, but he wasn't the Carlos Gonzalez of old even then. So, you know, the upside there is what being a little bit above average hitter, which is fine. You know, if that's what he returns to being, certainly you'll take that if you're the Rockies. But I really thought they would go out there and take advantage of this market and land someone a little bit better. Now, you know, maybe they're betting on David Dahl staying healthy, which doesn't seem like a good bet to make.
Yeah, that's a weird bet.
And maybe they're also betting on Ryan McMahon being as good as forecasted and coming in here and, you know, setting things aflame. But, I mean, it's funny to say, but losing Mark Reynolds even seems like a big deal to this team because, you know, he was a pretty good hitter last year for them. And or I think he was, well, let's not say pretty good. I think that might be overselling it. But, you know, he at least provided home runs, let's put it that way. And I think he finished just above the league average overall. So I don't want to, you know, make him sound like he was freaking Joey Votto here, but he was certainly better than Ian Desmond was, and now Ian Desmond's kind of reduced to a platoon role between multiple positions, I think. Maybe they'll trot him out there in the outfield as well as first base a little bit. But anyway, the point is, yeah, I didn't think they did enough, even with the bullpen additions. And that's a shame because this is a pretty fun young team for the most part. You know, Arenado is one of the best players in baseball. Charlie Blackman's going to get paid this winter. You know, the rotation, I obviously love John Gray for reasons that extend beyond his pitching. And then you have some other interesting youngsters, you know, German Marquise and even Tyler Anderson's kind of interesting, even though he's a little older than you would expect.
Yeah, it is another interesting team. There are some weird holes. I agree with you. I would have liked to have seen them do more, you know, Gerardo Parra and Ian Desmond and Pat Valleca and McMahon are all going to be part of possibly two platoons at first and left field. Some of those names are really not very good anymore. Parra has been really bad at times over the last couple of years. Pat Valaika really doesn't have a role as an everyday player, I think, or even as a regular platoon guy. The Desmond contract at the time looked terrible, now looks terrible. So I too would have liked to have seen them go a little bit more aggressively after a position player. If you want Mark Reynolds, he can still be had. He doesn't have a job. So that's something. But I do like the upgrade with Iannetta, with Iannetta behind the plate. I think he'll improve over Lucroy's production from last year. And I do really like what they did with the bullpen because I do think that there's room for the Rockies' rotation to improve, but I also think there's room for them to regress. And reinforcing the bullpen, I think, tends to raise the floor a little bit on overall run prevention for this team. So I like that move. I had them as the fourth team in the National League West, too, before all of the Giants pitchers got injured. Now I kind of would probably put them ahead of the Giants going forward, but it's a close one there. I think that they're going to be at least competitive, and I do see them as a 500 team.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I will say they do have some help on the way. Brendan Rodgers could slot in at shortstop at some point in the season. Trevor Story is just not very good, so I think that'd be a potentially big deal for them. And they also have Raymel Tapia. I already mentioned Dahl. And, on the pitching side of things, Jeff Hoffman, whatever he is, Yency Almonte, and Sam Howard. Plus, if you go down to double A, they could potentially push along Ryan Castellano and Peter Lambert. So those are all top 10 prospects for them, according to both BP and BA, and or guys who have graduated who were top 10 prospects like Tapia and Dahl. So they could potentially upgrade internally throughout the season. We'll just have to see there. But I think we both agree they left a little chicken on the bone here by not taking full advantage of the offseason and getting a more sure thing offensively.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And also, when you were talking about pitchers that could come up, Riley Pint could move really fast. So that's an option. He also could be a bullpen guy if they want to bring him up and have him be effective in the major leagues without fully stretching him out. So.
And let's not overlook the potential for a pitcher named Riley Pint pitching in Coors Field. There's going to be a lot of bad jokes there, folks.
Yeah, thanks for getting out on front of those. That was a good move, I think, on your part. So we go from the wild card teams to the team that's considered the class of the National League West, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Again, kind of a quiet offseason, especially for the Dodgers. Their biggest move might have been swapping Adrian Gonzalez for Matt Kemp. Not just Gonzalez, of course, Brandon McCarthy and Scott Kazmir left as well. Kazmir's out of a job. McCarthy might be a starter for the Braves, but Matt Kemp came back and it was kind of assumed that he'd be released and, not really a part of this Dodgers team. But sure enough, he's going to make the team as probably a reserve outfielder, maybe a platoon player. The Dodgers also added Scott Alexander to shore up their bullpen. They added JT Chargois, brought back, Chase Utley on a deal. It's a oh, and they brought in, I cannot forget, Tom Kohler, who immediately and promptly got injured. This is an interesting offseason for this team because I'm not sure many teams who wanted to contend in 2018 had a worse offseason than the Dodgers behind losing Yu Darvish and basically replacing him with I guess a couple of relief pitchers and Matt Kemp.
Yeah, the thing about Kemp, and I just want to know this, is I don't know if you've seen him this spring, but the dude looks like he lost half of himself over the offseason. So I'm like trying not to talk myself, I'm trying to talk myself out of believing that maybe he has a little bit more left than we anticipated, which I know he's not going to have some monster year or something, but I just sense like he's going to end up being this savvy addition for the Dodgers, and we're all going to be like, see, they're so smart and all. But I agree,
Too
this is
late. I'm all in on Matt Kemp this year. Like, I am completely buying in. I think he's been kind of underrated as a hitter in his Padres and Braves years. I mean, because we expect like the 8.5 win Bison MVP quality player for a while. He hit okay last year.
No, I mean, hitting has never been an issue for him.
Yeah.
He's been an above average hitter basically every season of his career, save for his, first introduction to the majors. The issue is that he's not so far of an above average hitter to make up for arguably the worst corner outfield defense in baseball, or at least, you know, some of the worst corner outfield defense in baseball. Now, maybe if you're being generous to Camp, you say, well, he's probably not negative 20 runs bad anymore, but we'll see. Of course, like you said, though, the rest of the offseason was very underwhelming. Scott Alexander was their upper pick addition, and while he's perfectly fine reliever, that's not really what you expected for a team that finished, you know, or excuse me, that lost the World Series. I feel like the teams that lose the World Series are usually more aggressive during the winter trying to get over the hump, and that's just not what the Dodgers had in mind this offseason. I mean, what was their third big addition? Re-signing Chase Utley? Yeah, that's kind of disappointing for a team who has a lot of injury issues. I mean, you know, you look at their rotation right now, it's Kershaw, Wood, Maeda, Hill, and you. Well, I mean, every single one of those guys could conceivably miss time. Mm-hmm. Maeda might be the safest thing there, and that's kind of terrifying, I think, if you're a Dodgers fan. And now, granted, they do have depth. I mean, you know, you can look at their farm system, and they have, you know, whether it's Verdugo or Tolles, you know, both those guys would start on a lot of teams, and they have Walker Buehler and Brock Stewart. And, you know, they have some other arms who are going to be getting double A who could conceivably reach the majors before long, and Dennis Santana, Yadier Alvarez, and Mitchell White. So, you know, let's not make it out like they have no options, but this is not the team that entered last spring where they had, like, what, 10 starting pitchers who could conceivably break camp on the 25-man roster / DL. You know, this is certainly a different team than that. They don't have much in the way of infield depth anymore. I know Jake Peter. I mean, you know, Jake Peter, he's gotten a little bit of hype, but I don't know that I'm buying in on that. And beyond that, it's pretty, you know, pretty threadbare down there. So I don't really know what they're going to do if they suffer a long-term injury on the infield. And I don't know what they're going to do if something were to happen to Kershaw, because this is not a team that's really – I mean, they really don't have that, you know, second ace anymore that they have with Darvish, unless you're really optimistic about Wood continuing what he did early last season, or, you know, Hill – he's going to be 38 pretty soon, though, and he's always had those injury issues. So I don't know. It's an interesting team, and I think I agree with you that, you know, they didn't really get better this winter. They probably got worse, and yet I still think they're going to win the National League West.
Yeah, I'm with you on everything that you said. I think that this Justin Turner injury, where he's broken his wrist, really is going to damage this team. He's the kind of the engine that makes the offense go. All due respect to Taylor Seager and Bellinger. I mean, they have an incredible offense, but Turner was a huge part of that. And going from Turner to now having to regularly play Logan Forsythe, probably as an everyday player, maybe gonna use Austin Barnes a little bit more in the infield. It just isn't a great fit for this team. And I really would like to see them, you know, if they had come a little bit more aggressively in some of their infield depth this offseason, maybe it could have mitigated that. But, you know, at the same time, they're loaded. They're still a loaded lineup, and they still have depth. So it's hard to pick anybody to come over them in the National League West. I agree with you. They're the team to beat.
Yeah, but again, their offseason was disappointing, and I realized that part of it was something unspoken here, which is, you know, getting underneath that collective bargaining agreed tax and trying to reset before they go hog wild next winter. But at the same time, you know, it feels like they could have done a little bit more, and maybe that's unfair. You know, maybe they will do something at the deadline and they feel confident enough in where they're sitting to take that approach. And, you know, that seems justified because, again, we're both picking them to win the West and we don't really see them as being threatened too much, but yeah, it's a disappointing winner for an otherwise good team.
So let's talk about a winner that was not disappointing, the San Diego Padres. They had an exciting winter. Not only did they bring in Eric Hosmer as one of the biggest ticket free agents of this entire offseason to play first base, even though they have a perfectly fine first baseman and holes elsewhere, they brought in Chase Headley to return and play third base regularly. They brought in Freddie Galvis to shore up shortstop, which has been a complete disaster for years. They brought back Tyson Ross to shore up the rotation. They brought in AJ Ellis as a backup catcher. They brought in Kazuhisa Makita. The Padres look to be on a little bit of a upward trajectory, especially when you take into account their all-world farm system. They're still the worst team in this division by far, right?
Yeah, I would say they're the worst team in this division, barring something unforeseen happening. That said, this is starting to look like a actual big league team, which is more than you could have said this time a year ago. Remember when we were talking about them having like four different World 5 picks on their opening day roster, and now you flash forward a year, and they basically have all major leaguers in their lineup and on their bench, and that's pretty impressive for a year's time. I absolutely love Manuel Margot. I think he's a star in the making, and Will Myers is perfectly fine. I've seen him a lot in right field, and he bugs me because he's so athletic. I mean, he's really more athletic than he looks, and yet he just can't seem to play a very good outfield, and that's annoying. But we've talked about the Hosmer signing at length. You either love it or hate it, I guess. And you keep going down the roster, and they have some interesting pieces. The rotation probably not going to be very good. I know Brian Mitchell is getting some of that, I don't want to say hype, but people were kind of looking at Brian Mitchell and saying, well, we'll see what he does. I don't know if I buy in that he's a starting pitcher, but I guess give him a shot. And the bullpen, I'm very shocked that you didn't mention them retaining Craig Stammen because that was a big deal to you last year.
It's
And
still a big deal to me. I love myself some Craig Stammen.
yeah, and of course, the Dennison Lamet injury kind of puts a damper on the season because I think he was the most exciting pitcher they had, and now who knows what's going to happen with him. So that's disappointing. But of course, we can't talk about the Padres without mentioning that they have some help on the way still. Luis Urias should be in the majors before long. You have Fernando Tatis Jr. I don't know if he's going to come up this season, but there's at least a chance. They still have Hunter Renfroe knocking around. I don't know what they're going to do with him, but he's of interest because of his pop. And on the starting pitching side of things, they have, I think, four or five arms who could realistically debut this season. Joey Lachusi, I think it is, Cal Quantrill, Eric Lauer, and Logan Allen among those. So, yeah, I don't think this team is going to be competitive, but I think they can be fun to watch so long as you check your expectations at the door and really just focus in on Manny Margot when you do watch them.
Yeah, I'm a little more nervous about the starting rotation because I'm not sure that any of the guys like Quantrill or Allen are going to be ready this year. And with that in mind, the way that the rotation is constructed, especially if Lamet is out for an extended period of time, I think they, only for the grace of the Miami Marlins, have the worst starting rotation in baseball.
Yeah, I can see that.
Clayton Richard, I mean, I was astonished that he threw almost 200 innings last year. I don't have a lot of faith that that's going to happen again, and he is by far the best starter they've got, which is crazy. Tyson Ross is, not nearly the pitcher he once was, even if he can stay healthy. Luis Perdomo is basically what I would consider the prototypical number five starter. Brian Mitchell has question marks. And there is no major league ready depth. Robbie Erlin's the only other guy that I think might be major league ready depth, and he's injured.
Well, what else is new there? I
Yeah, I
mean, I was
know
a
it's.
Robbie Erlin fan, and I don't know if he's thrown 100 innings since 2014 at this point. That guy is too bad.
A fascinating fact is that Erlin is by far the longest tenured Padre on this roster, which is really saying something. So I
Yeah.
think we're a year out from seeing the San Diego Padres as a team on the rise. I think this year there won't be any rise. I think that they will challenge with the Giants for the worst team in the National League West. I do think the Giants have a lot more upside, so I will not be surprised if the Padres win something like 70 games, and that's that.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But again, I will say this team does look much better than it did a year ago. And that they have, a few pieces who are worth tuning in to see if you have an interest in, seeing potential all-star outfielders like Manuel Margot. And yeah, I guess that's all I can say because you're right, the rotation is a mess. And even if you like watching Luis Perdomo's sinker, there's only so much of that you can stomach when he's, getting thrashed about and whatnot. So.
So we'll talk about the last team in the division, another team where the rotation is hot garbage, and that's the San Francisco Giants. Probably the most star-powered offseason of any team in baseball. They traded for both Evan Longoria and Andrew McCutchen. So if it were 5 years ago, we would be picking the Giants to win the World Series, which would have been really smart because they did win the World Series 5 years ago. But in addition to that, they brought in Austin Jackson to shore up the outfield. They brought in Tony Watson to shore up the bullpen. Gregor Blanco's back, but nobody cares. And other than that, they're retaining much of what seemed like it was going to be a good team prior to 2017. The only problem is they tend to be an older team, and unfortunately, they've got the same issue that they had last year where Madison Bumgarner is injured, and he's going to miss a few weeks to start the season. Jeff Samardzija is injured, which is kind of shocking because he's been one of the most reliable starters in terms of innings pitched and really in terms of performance, aside from one bad season. The Giants have a lot of good players on this team. Do you expect the team itself to be good?
I did before the injuries. And I want to point out that this is yet another team who let the CBT prevent them from, maximizing their chances of being a very good team this year, because they could have easily have taken advantage of the free agent market and signed Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn, even Jake Arrieta. They
Maybe I want to push back on that because this is a team that added the salaries of Andrew McCutchen and Evan Longoria. I don't want to put them in the same boat as the Dodgers, who really just let you Darvish go.
That's fair, but they also did that in part because Matt Cain retired, and they were able to trade Denard Span and all that. So let's also not like make it sound like they took on, and plus McCutcheon's a 1 year deal, so
Yeah, that's fair.
you're not going to get a player in McCutcheon's quality for a 1 year deal of what they are paying him. Now Longoria, they did take on, I think it was like $50 million all when it was all said and done, which is not nothing, but it's certainly not taking on a $100 million contract or what
Sure.
have you. So anyway, the rotation's bad now. You're starting Ty Block on opening day. Things are in a bad spot. And then you have Derek Holland and Chris Stratton. And I've seen Stratton get some hype because of his spin rate, and I just am not believing in any of that. Maybe if they're lucky, he's a back-end starter. But yeah, it's bad. And I mean, Juani Cueto is by far their best starting pitcher, and he had kind of a rough season last year. I'm not sure what to make of that one, because it's conceivable that he's not the Cueto of old, and that he's on the decline a little bit. And if so, you could talk about this being one of the worst rotations in baseball, at least as currently constructed.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I would be more likely to project a little bit of a bounce back from Cueto because of his varied pitch mix, because he was injured for part of last year, and it looks like that injury might have righted itself a little bit. It looks like some of his stuff has come back, so I'm cautiously optimistic about Cueto maybe rebounding to being a really good mid-rotation starter, if not a top of the rotation starter.
And we mentioned the bullpen just a little bit with Tony Watson signing, but I don't know if you could name every member of this bullpen. Like, I think you'd get Strickland. I think you would get Corey Guerin, maybe Josh Osich. They have Sam Dyson as well, and Roster Resource projects the last two arms in the bullpen to be Roberto Gomez and Pierce Johnson. Have you heard of either of those individuals before right now?
Gomez, absolutely not, but Pierce Johnson, I do remember from lots of Cubs fans who raved and raved about their pitching depth when they really didn't have any and now still don't.
Actually, I just realized I watched Roberto Gomez last year. I thought he was a minor league deal signing from this winter. Nope, he made four appearances last season. So I'm sorry, Roberto Gomez. We should have heard of you. But he is a 28-year-old rookie, so you know how that goes.
Yeah, it usually doesn't go too well. And their bench is weird. I love Nick Hundley. I think he's probably one of the best backup catchers in baseball, so that's great. It allows Buster Posey to get some more time at first base and DH when the cause arises. Pablo Sandoval, it's still weird. It's still weird that he has a major league job. It's not weird seeing him back with the Giants, but it's still weird that he has a job. And then, the Kelby Tomlinson, Gorkys Hernandez, Gregor Blanco mix backing up. Not exactly what you'd want from a wild card contender, but the lineup is so good. Everything else about this team looks really solid. If they can find some way to get Bumgarner back and pitching well and Samardzija back and pitching well, I really do see this team as contending for a wild card spot. It just so happens that that's not happening right now.
Yeah, and I will also know they don't have a whole lot of depth on the farm.
No.
Steven Duggar is basically the extent of their positional player depth. I guess Austin Slater, too, so you can throw those two names in there. Otherwise, I guess you're banking on Chris Shaw being your big bat, big internal improvement if you need one, and that's just about it. Tyler Beede on the pitching side, and I guess maybe Andrew Suarez, who you know, he's not really going to be like a impact pitcher or anything for them. So this is basically their best effort once they get back Bumgarner and once they get back Samardzija. There's not really a lot of help coming internally or externally because they really don't have the parts anymore to make a big midseason trade. So we'll see. I would have agreed with you that they would have been in the wild card contention if all healthy. The problem is it doesn't seem like you can really say this team will ever be healthy at this point. So we'll see. But, yeah, it's going to be at least fun to see Andrew McCutchen and Evan Longoria flanking Buster Posey and, you know, some of those other names in that lineup. And who knows? Maybe they can stay afloat until they get their pitchers back. And from there, you know, it is even year. So we'll see.
That's true. And aesthetically, like you said, with McCutchen and Longoria and Posey, this is going to be a really fun team to watch hit and play the field. So you'll at least have that to hang on to.
Yep.
Let's move over to the National League Central, and we'll start things off with the 2016 World Series champs, the Chicago Cubs. They added very specifically, they had a busy busy offseason when it came to pitchers. Obviously, the big news is Yu Darvish joining the rotation in place of Jake Arrieta. They also added Tyler Chatwood in place of John Lackey. They brought in Brandon Morrow in place of Wade Davis. They brought in Steve Cishek, who I think is kind of an underrated addition to that bullpen. But if you think about it, this team really just plugged holes of players leaving. They didn't make any upgrades, you could argue. Now, I do think Yu Darvish is an upgrade over Jake Arrieta. I do think Tyler Chatwood... Well, we can talk about Tyler Chatwood separately. I'm not a big Tyler Chatwood guy. So I see this Cubs team as very, very similar to the 2017 incarnation. What do you think?
I mean, I think that's perfectly fair. The lineup and bench were basically untouched. So, you know, for the most part, they're rolling out there with the same bunch minus Sean Jay. And I guess you just want to talk about Chatwood because I think he's the most interesting part. And I think in retrospect, they probably shot their shot a little too soon with him because of the deals that other perhaps better starting pitchers received. I get the explanations for why people are higher on him than I am, but I can't help but feel that like he's a bad season away from being shifted to the bullpen because of factors that we talked about when he first signed. And I don't know. I feel like at this point he's been, you know, talked about how he can be more than he's shown so many times that he's actually reached the point of being overrated, which is crazy because he hasn't even made a regular season start for the Cubs yet. So I don't know. Am I alone thinking that he's probably getting too much hype for what he could be when there's really a lot of downsides to him as he is or as he was?
No, I don't think so at all. I think I made it pretty clear when we talked about the acquisition when it happened that I do not see him as anything better than, at best, a number five starter. His walk issues concern me greatly. And you can have all the spin rate and you can have all the other things that go along with, you know, having a pitcher think that he's fixable in the world. If you can't put the ball over the plate and you can't go deep into games, you're not a good starting pitcher. And he's had a pretty long career. He's been pitching in the majors on and off since 2011. He's never had a DRA above league average. He's never had a context-related FIP above average. He has never been a remarkably good pitcher. And he got this big contract coming off a season with a 4.69 ERA and a relatively pedestrian strikeout rate. So it's not like even the more common Peripherals really speak to him being a great pitcher. Yeah, he can get ground balls, and that's great. And especially being able to do that in front of the Cubs defense, that's a really strong asset. It's just that none of the rest of the package seems very good.
Yeah, and he's a short righty who hasn't really withstood big workloads. I mean, last two seasons he's thrown 158 and 147 and two-thirds innings, and those were both, or excuse me, those are his most ever. So I don't know. This is a case where the Cubs are basically betting on their ability to, I guess, make the most of his arsenal in a way that maybe the Rockies and maybe Coors Field didn't allow, because we talked about his spin rate. Well, you know how many curveballs, or do you know what percentage of pitches his curveball represented last season?
I mean, I would hope it would be over a quarter of his pitches.
It was 11% if you round up, and
See,
that's
that's
an
not
aggressive
great.
round up. Yeah.
I understand maybe not throwing it so much in Colorado, but still, that's weird.
Yeah. So I guess they're banking on him maybe throwing it 30% or even more, and seeing the results change from there. And maybe that happens, but the command is problematic, and I don't think Coors Field explains all of that, because he's had it even dating back to his Angels days. And you're right, he really hasn't always missed many bats. I mean, his career strikeout to walk ratio was under 1.5. And I think if the Royals had signed him, or if the Marlins had signed him, people would be a little bit more, how do we say this? What's a nice way of putting this? A little more critical of his career and his achievements and whatnot, or lack of achievements, I guess we should say. But because it's the Cubs, and because Theo Epstein is arguably the best general manager, even though he's not a general manager in baseball, we're giving them the benefit of the doubt. And maybe they do fix him or transform him into a mid-rotation starter, and we look stupid here. But yeah, I think if he were with basically any other team in baseball, people would be a little bit more willing to just kind of call him a reliever, or a starter who should be a reliever.
Yeah, I agree with you on all counts there. So, but at the same time, there's so much talent on this team that you can't argue with them as the class of the National League Central, possibly the class of the National League. It's just a really good offense, and that you understand why the team didn't mess with it because it's already really great.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. On the other side of the spectrum is the Cincinnati Reds. The Reds have a really weird roster, if you ask me. They did not make major moves this offseason. They reinforced their bullpen with guys who are generally considered cast-offs. David Hernandez is pretty good. I liked that move. I thought that was a smart move. The rest of their bullpen, save Rossell Iglesias and Lorenzen, Michael Lorenzen, was so horrible last year that they had to turn it over almost entirely. But the guys they brought in to turn this bullpen over are Jared Hughes, Kevin Quackenbush, Vance Worley, not, good pitchers. And then
Oh, come on now. Jared Hughes is perfectly fine as a, like, you don't want him pitching high leverage for you, but he's perfectly fine as like a, your third or fourth best right-hander, or maybe even second or third best, depending on, the bullpen structure.
Yeah, I do think that you're probably right there. They didn't really do anything to address their bench. I mean, the guys they've brought in there are Cliff Pennington and Phil Gosselin. It's a
Yeah.
team that's trying to let its youth play. And Jesse Winker's going to step into the lineup. You're going to see Tyler Mahle get into the rotation. Luis Castillo's going to have some more time in the rotation. They've got a lot of what I would consider fringy young guys coming into the rotation. There's a lot of spots to fill because of Anthony Desclafani and Brandon Finnegan's injuries, but there's not what I would consider a lot of that top end talent. Those guys that you say, oh yeah, we gotta give Robert Stevenson or Curry Mella a really great shot at this, because I think they've kind of shot their shot and it's not looking as promising as we might have thought it was originally. So they've got some kind of questionable dudes in the rotation, but they're going to let them pitch and they're going to see what they've got.
Yeah, and I would throw Cody Reed into that mix too, because if you remember when they first got him, he was pretty hyped, and
Yeah.
nothing has come of that. They do have a lot of young arms that are to throw at these spots, and maybe those guys work out and become number four starters. And if so, if they can shut out a rotation of number four starters, then, who knows? But I will say that Sal Romano is pretty interesting to me. I think we're going to start calling him the pizza horse. But they have a lot of interesting parts that are interesting to me. Winker and that outfield, they have more outfield talent than they have outfield spots. They also have, you mentioned, Luis Castillo. He's very interesting. And Tyler Mahle, when I saw what I saw of him last year, he looked pretty much my type, a pitchability guy who knows what he's doing out there. So I'm interested in him. Amir Garrett, I'm interested to see what he does as well, because supposedly he was dealing with some physical issues last year. So, maybe this year, if he's 100%, he can go out there and make good on his upside. But yeah, this is still a team that's not quite there. They do have some parts who seem like they could be there when they do get there, but they really need some revelations on the pitching side in the next year or so to feel better about where this rebuild is headed. Because if these young arms don't work out for them, I don't really know where they're going to get it from. Are you going to bank on, Vladimir Gutierrez, who could be up in 2019? And because beyond that, you're starting to talk about 2020. Even for like Hunter Green, I think 2020 is probably a decent estimate. And I don't know. It just doesn't feel like this team should be two more seasons away, given how long it seems like they've been down. But boy, it might come to that, because I just don't know if they have enough there to make a workable rotation and to, build a competitive team based on the parts in place. And that's concerning to me, because this rebuild feels like it's been going on forever.
Yeah, it's been a long road in Cincinnati, I feel like, since the days when Johnny Cueto was leading the team at least to playoff contention. The one guy I want to bring up that we haven't talked about yet is Nick Senzel. He is my dark horse pick for Rookie of the Year in the National League. I think we're going to see him sooner rather than later because I think he's going to force the issue for this Reds team. And depending on what type of games they want to play with their service time versus what type of games the Braves want to play with Ronald Acuña, I could see Senzel making a really powerful impact early on. He is a phenomenal hitter. And depending on where the team chooses to play him, whether it's going to be at second base or shortstop versus his natural third base where Eugenio Suarez is, possibly the second best player on this team. Especially if he can hold his own at one of those up the middle positions, I think that he's going to be like one of those game-changing type of players that's going to accelerate this team's rebuild a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with all that. He's a heck of a player, and wherever they slot him in, he's going to be a pretty big upgrade. And yeah, I mean, I could definitely buy him as Rookie of the Year. I know Acuña is probably the best. Oh, I think he is the best prospect in baseball, but I think he's probably the favorite to win the National League Rookie of the Year just based on that. But he's also, what, 20 years old? I mean, there's a chance he comes up and struggles a little bit, and then there's nothing to be alarmed about if he does. So
Right.
Senzel's a little older, and yeah, I don't have any issue at all with that pick. I think that might be the smart pick, honestly. You look one step below in terms of prospect ranking, and yet, he's a little more mature, and yeah, why not?
So let's move over to the team that I've wanted to talk about the most since we've started doing this project, and that's the Milwaukee Brewers. They had a enormously active couple of days where they brought in Lorenzo Cain on a free agent deal, really a couple of hours, almost immediately after trading for Christian Yelich from the Marlins. More importantly than that, though, they brought in Ulys Chacon to shore up their starting rotation. And as anybody who's listened to this show knows, there's few players that I am more interested in than Chacon, who's been underrated for years. They reinforced their bullpen a little bit with Matt Albers, but this is really interesting to me because this feels like a wildly unfinished offseason.
Yeah, I mean, the rotation needed more help than they gave it, and it seemed like they were well set up to give it that help, whether they would have went out and got Lynn, Arrieta, or Cobb. They ended up 0-3, and now they're in this uncomfortable situation where Wade Miley got hurt, and somehow that's bad news, because Wade Miley was awful last season, and yet that seems like a big deal to this team. And I believe they're going to trot out a rotation of Chase Anderson, your boy, Brent Suter, and Zach Davies. And I'm a fan of Zach Davies, and I really enjoyed watching Brent Suter last season. He has the wingspan of a prehistoric bird of prey, and he gets that deep extension point, and, you know, makes his, let's face it, you know, pedestrian fastball. And that might be kind to be calling it a pedestrian fastball play up. So there's a lot of fun there, but yeah, this is wildly uninspiring for a team who seemingly had the world right there in its pulse.
Yeah, and yeah, it's possible that Corbin Burnes is going to come up at some point and throw hard. It's possible that Jimmy Nelson's going to come back and be a lot like he was at the first half of last year. But it's also possible that that doesn't happen. And
yeah,
if that's the case, you know, you've got another team that we've talked about with championship hopes and a weak starting rotation. The thing for me is that this team really stocked up on outfield players, and I think it was really smart, even despite not doing anything afterwards. But now they've got this a backlog. They've got Domingo Santana, who is probably only going to be a short side platoon player with Eric Thames. I always mess that up, and I don't know why. They got Brett Phillips, who's going to be stuck in AAA, even though he's got nothing to prove there. Same thing with Keon Broxton, who, yeah, is probably a reserve outfielder, but isn't even a reserve outfielder on this team. It's a really weird situation when you've got so many weaknesses at other parts of your team, you wouldn't try to turn these outfielders into starting pitching. Now, maybe the right deal didn't present itself, and I hate dealing from a position of you have to make a trade. So perhaps that was good and perhaps that was smart, but there's a weird lopsidedness to this roster. And yes, I would take Yelich and Kane every day of the week and twice on Sundays, even if you've got other outfielders. But it seems like this team is unfinished, and I wonder if it's going to be finished by the middle of the season.
Yeah, I would even add that they could have made a lot of sense for Neil Walker.
Yep.
They could have made a lot of sense for Jonathan Lucroy or one of those catchers, because right now I believe Manny Pena is going to be their default option behind the plate, which no, you know, just no. So I don't really know what they did there. It's like they were waiting on a trade to happen that just never happened. I mean, Shinku Urizi would have been an upgrade for this team, and yet they couldn't beat the offer that made up the Twins, Odorizzi. I just don't believe that, because this farm system still has some pretty good parts. Now, that said, you know, we don't want to be all doom and gloom here. They have Corey Knebel and Josh Hader in the bullpen. That's one of the best 1-2 punches in baseball. I think it will be one of the best 1-2 punches in baseball before season's end. Chase Anderson and Zach Davies are probably a little underrated. They're both, you know, perfectly fine mid-rotation starters. And, you know, the outfield obviously speaks for itself. Ryan Braun, he's kind of changing positions for, what, the third or fourth time in his career? I don't think he gets credited enough for that, because how many guys with Ryan Braun's list of accomplishments and meaning to this franchise would change positions without complaining as much as he has?
I think very few would.
Yeah, so I know that he has this, you know, the performance-enhancing drug things against him, but he has been a remarkable team player for them otherwise, and, you know, credit to him for that. So, yeah, they have a lot of talent on their bench, too, like, and Domingo Santana, I guess, is who I'm really talking about there. But, you know, Jesus Aguilar had a decent season in a, you know, a trivial, not trivial, like, yeah, let's call it a platoon role, whatever. He had a decent season last year. So, yeah, they have some talent on their bench, too, and yeah, I don't know. It seems like you said, they kind of wasted their opportunity, which is disappointing, because it would have been pretty fun to see Milwaukee get one or two more pitchers and really make the Cubs sweat a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So we go from a very deeply interesting National League Central team to probably the team I consider the least interesting team in the National League, and that's the Pittsburgh Pirates. Their offseason was all about subtraction. The face of their franchise for the last decade is gone. He's in San Francisco. Andrew McCutchen is off this team. In return, the Pirates got nothing that's going to help them anytime soon, probably. In addition to that, they traded away their best starting pitcher in Gerrit Cole to the Astros. And for him, they've received some more close to the majors help in Colin Moran and Joe Musgrove. Those just also happen to be two players that I don't have a lot of faith in being particularly great going into the 2018 season. They did make what I consider a smart trade for Corey Dickerson, and I liked that deal at the time. They brought in Michael Feliz to shore up the bullpen as part of that Garrett Cole trade. But again, I'm not a big Michael Feliz guy. And then
Yeah.
their only other big acquisitions have been guys like Rule 5 pick Nick Birdie, Rule 5 pick Nick Turley, which is really weird to say that. And then Josh Smoker is going to make this team's bullpen. I actually think that was a pretty good pickup as well. So, but this team is, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look fun or interesting. And I have a lot of trouble looking at the long-term forecast for this team and getting happy.
I agree with all that. They do have some young parts on the way. Kevin Newman, for instance, I don't know if you still believe in him. Austin
Yeah.
Meadows, don't know if you believe in him. Jordan Luplow, don't know if you believe in him. And on the pitching side, Nick Kingham, Clay Holmes. And yeah, it's I guess you're kind of just waiting for Mitch Keller to reach the majors and, maybe Taillon and Keller and, whatever becomes of Glasnow and, Cole and what's his face? Williams and Musgrove. Maybe you get a couple of mid-rotation starters out of that bunch, and maybe the pitching leads their way back. But this team seems like it's still very much at the beginning of a rebuild.
Yeah.
And, Dickerson seems like he's probably not going to be there through the deadline. I would assume they could find a taker for him, although maybe they decide to hold on to him for some reason. I don't know. Josh Harrison, again, he feels like he's not long for this team. Honestly, you could probably make the same argument for Polanco and/or Marte because Polanco is really disappointed, and Marte, he's going to be 30 later this year. Maybe they decide to cash in the chips on him. I don't know because he's a really good player signed to a sweet deal. Jordy Mercer's in his last year there. I think they would probably love to move Frankie Cervelli if they could. David Freese and Sean Rodriguez are going to be gone off the bench, so I don't think this team is done subtracting. And I don't really know what they're going to look like come this time next year. I feel like it's going to be another drastic reset. And maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But yeah, this is a boring team. You're right. A lot of things have to break right for them to be in competition for a wild card spot. And it doesn't seem likely that that will happen because I think we both agree they are the fourth best team in this division.
Yes.
And yeah, and I don't know if they're. I don't think they're likely to finish last in the division, but I can see a path there easier than I can see a path to them finishing in the top three spots.
Yeah, I actually, there are things I really like about this team. Like, I really like the collection of Williams and Taillon and even Tyler Glasnow as guys with still some room to grow as starting pitchers. And so I don't think they're as far behind from a starting pitching standpoint as some of these other teams. Nova's pretty solid. Chad Kuhl, I'm not a believer, but if he has another season like last year, he'll make me one. And you mentioned Mitch Keller. Mitch Keller might be the best pitching prospect in baseball. He's up there with guys like Sixto Sanchez right now. He's something else. So I feel like that the pitching side of things, there's a little bit more hope still for a couple in the next couple of years. But you're right, like everything else may not come together and they may have to deal off some of those guys for more future talent to continue a rebuild.
Yeah, so not the best of situations in Pittsburgh, and I don't know. I don't have anything else really to say about that team. I agree, they're kind of boring, and we'll see. Maybe Colin Moran is the truth and goes out there and basically becomes, a left-handed David Freese or something, and that's perfectly fine. But still, an underwhelming return on Garrett Cole, considering all things considered, so.
Yeah, and I hope that's what happens. Like, I would love to see some of these guys like Musgrove and Moran really thrive in Philadelphia, in Pittsburgh, because I would like that trade to work out for both teams. I just I have less faith in that than I would have if they would have pulled back some other talents from the Astros.
Yeah, I want them to be better than we think too, because I want to go to PNC Park at some point this year, and I
Yeah.
actually want to like enjoy the baseball watching experience beyond just looking at a beautiful ballpark and whatnot. So hopefully they are better than we think, but it doesn't seem likely because it's just hard to see a lot of upside from some of these players. But anyway, a team that I think we are higher on would be the St. Louis Cardinals. They had a couple of interesting moves this winter, trading for Marcell Ozuna. That's certainly the top move they made. They also got Yaro Munoz. I'm butchering his
Munoz.
name. Munoz. I can't talk this morning. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Yaro. They got him the Steven Piscotty deal. He's going to make their opening day roster. They signed Miles Mikolas from Japan. He's going to be the back of the rotation. They also added Dominic Leone in a trade for Reino Gricek. And Gricek, rather, and they also signed Bud Norris and Luke Gregersen for the bullpen. Of course, Gregersen's already injured, leaving some question about who will close for them. And this otherwise pretty straightforward roster, I feel like. There's not really. Oh, and I forgot to mention the Paul DeJong extension that caught us both off guard. But this looks like a good team on paper. It certainly has some areas where I am a little skeptical of. For instance, the back of the rotation with back of the rotation and also the back of the bullpen, because it feels like they made the most sense for Greg Holland, and yet Greg Holland is not on the roster.
Yeah, I keep hoping that, before we record that Holland will have signed and that we get to talk about that, but nope, sure hasn't. It's an interesting roster. I like you said, it's a good roster. It's just doesn't seem to me like a great roster. The starting lineup looks great. The starting rotation actually to me looks pretty sharp. I like the Mikolas signing to shore up the back of the bullpen while they see if guys like Luke Weaver and Jack Flaherty, and maybe at some point Alex Reyes are able to take, really big steps and fill out that rotation on the regular. Carlos Martinez is consistently underrated, and I think he's excellent. The bench looks bad. Some people are super into the Jose Martinez experience. I do not. Fall in that category. I'm not one of those people. I'm very surprised Yairo Munoz made this team. And the bullpen, like you said, I liked that Leone trade. I'm not a Randall Grichuk guy, so I loved the trade of Grichuk for Leone, especially after I had some time to think about it. But the rest of the bullpen is really questionable to me. I even liked the Bud Norris signing. I thought that was pretty good. Leone, Lyons, Norris, Bowman and Cecil are a little weird, and then it's just nothing else after that. And I think that's a little strange. I'm also really thrown by the Carson Kelly thing. I know you have to play Yadier Molina. He's the heart and soul of this team, but I'm surprised he's not with the big league club.
I agree with that. I will say, though, the bullpen is getting some hype from guys like Jordan Hicks, who was one of their top 10 prospects and is supposed to open the season in their pen. And also, Mayer's getting some hype recently due to, I believe, his spin rate and stuff like that. So maybe those two guys are a little bit better than we're giving them credit for, and maybe they help make this a strength rather than a weakness. I suppose my comment about the rotation is mostly about Mikolas. I'm just skeptical of him
Yeah.
being more than a back-end guy. I do like Luke Weaver, and I've liked Jack Flaherty for years. You can go back in the BP archives, and when we played the trade game, I wanted Flaherty. So I think this is a good team. I agree. It doesn't look like a great team, and I really don't know what would push them to great team territory for me, other than an impact level addition, which, for the record, Ozuna kind of is. I mean, he's a heck of a hitter.
Yeah.
I think we kind of forget about that deal when we talk about. I feel like we talk about Yelich and Stanton a lot more than we talk about the Ozuna acquisition, and yet you slide him into the middle of this lineup. If Fowler can get on base, if Pham can do what he did last season, this lineup looks like it could be pretty good.
I think the thing that throws me is, at least in my head, if not in the projection systems, I project some regression for a lot of the players in that Cardinals lineup. Between DeJong and Pham and Ozuna, those are three guys that I see as pretty high-level regression candidates for next year. And maybe some of that is wrong because, we have these priors that we build up, and Pham and DeJong really. DeJong more than Pham, but they did emerge kind of out of nowhere. So maybe that's me dwelling too much on pre-2017 thoughts over 2018 thoughts. Maybe that's a bug and not a feature. But I do see all three of those players not necessarily being as good as they were last year. It could still be a very good offensive team, and I still think this is an above 500 team. It's just that I don't necessarily project that they're going to get that all-world performance from all their players again.
Yeah, that's fair. But I still think they're going to be in the race for the second wild card spot. And it's certainly possible they finish second in the NL Central.
Yeah, I was going back and forth between three or four teams for the second wild card spot in the National League. I have a different team than the Cardinals as my second wild card spot team, but it would not surprise me at all.
Agreed.
Okay, so the National League East, we'll fire through this and finish up our National League preview. We'll start with the Atlanta Braves. The Braves offseason has been well, it's been something. They first acquired Adrian Gonzalez for Matt Kemp in a shift of money move, and then immediately cut Gonzalez and kicked him to the curb. In terms of players that are actually going to be with this team this year, Brandon McCarthy is the pickup from that deal that's going to matter for them because he's probably going to step into the rotation and probably going to be one of the team's better starters. It's very possible this
Boy.
year. Charlie Culberson also made this team. I don't want to talk about that because, well, this team added Charlie Culberson and Ryan Flaherty as their third baseman for this team. A platoon between those two guys. Now, in part, that's because Johan Camargo is injured again, much like he was last year. They've also added Preston Tucker, who may be their opening day left fielder. They've added Peter Borjos, who may be their opening day left fielder. They've added Chris Stewart, who may be the third catcher on this roster. They did bring back Peter Moylan, and that matters. And they made a Rule 5 pickup in Dan Winkler. I think he's been returned to them by this point. I think that last season the Braves made some interesting moves to make them relevant and not be completely terrible in 2017 while they rebuilt. Now I see that this rebuild is going slower and less than what I would have wanted it to be, and they did not make any moves to get better for 2018. What do you
Yeah.
think?
No, I think that's all accurate. I would note that I like two of their waiver claims who you didn't mention. One was Grant Dayton, who underwent Tommy John surgery last August, so probably won't be a factor this season. And I also like the Chase Whitley pickup. I know he has
Okay.
a staph infection right now, and who knows when he'll be back, but I thought that was a nice little pickup at the time because they didn't really have a ton of veteran rotation depth. And I think he can also be a factor out of the bullpen because this bullpen has potential to be very bad. I mean,
It does.
Sam Freeman, if Dan Winkler's in there, him, Rex Brothers, and Shane Carl, that's. Whoa. But yeah, you're right. This team really didn't do anything to improve itself for the season. And I think that was kind of their intent. Now, with that said, once they insert Ronald Acuña into the outfield, the lineup actually could be okay. I mean, Enciarte is obviously a pretty good player. Freddie Freeman's a pretty good player. I like Tyler Flowers. You insert Acuña if Swanson bounces back. Third base looks like it's going to be bad unless, something ridiculous happens there. But there are some interesting parts here. I didn't even mention Albies. I don't think I got to throw him in there as well. This could be an interesting lineup, but this team is not going to be competitive, and this isn't, again, a year about seeing what they have with some of these younger players. Sean Newcomb, he drives me crazy, and I don't know what he is, and I don't know what he's going to be, but they owe it to themselves to give him a little bit more time. And the same is true of some of their other younger pitchers who kind of came up and failed. Wisler is really who I have in mind when I say that, but Aaron Blair and Lucas Sims and Max Fry, they should all get innings this season. And to the Braves' credit, they also have a chance to bring up Soroka and Allard as the season progresses. And maybe even Kyle Wright. I think that's probably being a little too aggressive, but who knows? And those three, maybe they change the complexion of how we feel about this team. And Fried is probably deserving of a little bit more of a leash than some of the other names I mentioned. But there's certainly some interesting young talent that will reach the shores this season, and we'll see. I know they're seemingly saving third base for Austin Riley, but I was surprised that they didn't get involved with Moustakas or Frazier or, even a trade for a bit more of a legitimate stopgap because,
Well, here's the thing, in my opinion, is that they literally did trade for one. We didn't talk about it, but Ryan Schimpf exists. And I'm sorry, I cannot see a case to put Ryan Flaherty on this roster over Ryan Schimpf.
I can.
What is it because Schimpf is bad? Because they're both bad.
Okay. Yes, but let me put it this way. Yes, Ryan Schiff is not very good, even if he is sort of entertaining in a sense. However, I feel like it's very, very hard to put a guy who went 0 for 30 with 19 strikeouts during spring training on your roster.
Yeah.
I know it's spring training, it doesn't matter, but 0 for 30
You're
with
right.
19 strikeouts, you almost have to farm that guy out,
You're right.
right?
And this team does have this, I won't say bizarre fascination because I just don't share it, with this idea of like, oh, Charlie Culberson is a get. We got to make some playing time for him against, lefties. So that doesn't surprise me too much. I don't think there's going to be a single midseason upgrade that's going to be as good as the move from the Preston Tucker, Lane Adams, or Preston Tucker, Peter Burgess platoon to Ronald Acuna. That dude looks like a five-win player from the jump. And Preston Tucker isn't really a major leaguer. And I'm not convinced Lane Adams or Peter Burgess is at this point either. So this team could get better in a hurry. I would like to see them maybe start giving up on some of these starting pitchers that you talked about, the guys like Whistler and Blair and Sims, and throw them in the bullpen, because that
Yeah.
bullpen needs help. And there's nothing that I've seen from Blair or Whistler at this point that I think tells me that they're going to be at all effective as a starting pitcher. So unless they really just need to get triple-A innings, I think that's it's time to start seeing if they can do something out of the pen.
I agree with all that. And yeah, the Culberson love, I don't get that at all. I mean, this is a guy who, as a 28-year-old, hit 250, 299, 336 in Triple-A last season. And
Yeah.
that's an over 400 plate appearances in the PCL. I don't understand that at all. Is it because he had a memorable postseason? Is that it? Because otherwise, I'm at a loss for why he would be considered a get. I just don't understand that one. But you're right. It would be fair to start throwing some of those arms in the bullpen and seeing what you got there. And I don't know. It's not a good team. It's not the worst team we're going to talk about in this division. And
Speaking of the worst team that we're going to talk about, the Miami Marlins. They had an eventful offseason. You want to talk about that a little bit?
all right, I guess I'll do the deed. We traded away D. Gordon, Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich, and Marcell Ozuna. And they brought in, and I'll just, whatever, I'm just going to list the names. I'm not even going to explain how they all got here. You can figure that out for yourselves. Lewis Brinson, Starlin Castro, Cameron Maven, Chad Wallach, Garrett Cooper, Braxton, excuse me, not Braxton Lee, J.B. Shuck, Yadier Rivera, Caleb Smith, and Jacob Turner. Those are their new additions. Plus, you have a couple of Rule 5 picks who seem likely to open the season on a disabled list, and Brett Graves and Eliezer Hernandez. But, folks, this is a bad team. I mean, if you want proof of how bad this team is, just look at their rotation, look at their bullpen, look at their bench. This is a team that's going to lose at least 100 games. I don't know if it's crazy to be talking about 110 plus losses for this team. Do you?
No, I don't think that's crazy. And I think the reason for it is that they're not trying to be good. Lewis Brinson starting the season in the major leagues is probably a salve to some people you would have almost no reason to go to a Marlins game otherwise. But they're not trying to put their best foot forward. Yes, they signed Cameron Maben to be an everyday outfielder. I guess that's doing something. But their rotation of Jose Urena, Caleb Smith, Odorsammar Despain, Chris O'Grady, and who the heck knows after that point is embarrassing. They optioned Dylan Peters to AAA. They optioned Sandy Alcantara to AAA. Those are probably their two best starting pitchers at this point, and they're not even running them out there to start the season. I mean, you could see reasons to put guys like Scott Van Slyke or Maggie Sierra on the actual roster, but they're not doing that. They didn't sign even like any premier NRI guys. I mean, JB Shuck's going to make this roster. You probably are going to see guys like Chad Wallach has no business being on a major league roster at any point. It's just they're not even trying. And so I don't even want to dignify it with a response. At least they don't have a bottom five farm system anymore, but it's still not a top 10 probably.
Right, but I would disagree. They did sign one premier non-roster type, Eric Campbell.
I hate you.
And that's the end of this podcast.
RJ's just been fired. I fired myself. I fired RJ. We're all done.
This is an ugly, ugly roster, folks.
Yeah, it's very bad. Ugly. And I don't want to dignify it with more talk. It's a bad team.
No, let's move on to the New York Mets. Man, I am just off today. The Mets actually had, I think we would agree, a good offseason. They signed Jay Bruce, signed Todd Frazier, signed Adrian Gonzalez, all to fairly reasonable deals. They also brought back Jose Reyes for some reason beyond us. They added Anthony Swarzak to the bullpen and Jason Vargas to the rotation. And otherwise, you know, early on, it looked like they were going to bring back mostly the same team. Disappointing last season. They decided instead to, I think, make some upgrades, some legitimate upgrades. You know, Frazier in particular was a savvy deal for them. And I don't know, I could see this team easily competing for a wild card spot.
So they are my second wild card pick.
Homer.
Yeah, you can call it a homer pick. That's fine. I usually tend to skew pessimistic on the Mets, but I do think that they've added enough depth, and I think there's a better chance of their rotation being healthy this year than there was last year, with Syndergaard coming out the gate and looking so strong early on, DeGrom being probably the most unsung ace in baseball at this point. I like the moves individually that they made. Frazier was great. Jay Bruce was great. Adrian Gonzalez was a thing. Jose Reyes was a bad move. But the Anthony Swarzak deal I like individually. There's a lot of people, and I do actually like the Jason Vargas deal too. There's a lot of people who would much rather have seen them go out and make one great move instead of all these little moves. And I subscribe to that too. But this team did need depth as well. And I definitely think that going this route is a acceptable path to take, especially given the constraints they were operating under. Would the team be better if they had signed Yu Darvish or Jake Arrieta instead of making all these other deals and then just rolling with the rest of the team that they had? Maybe. But this is a solid team. And now that Robert Gsellman is moving to the bullpen, Anthony Swarzak's going to shore up the bullpen a little bit. You may get some healthy time from guys like Seth Lugo and Steven Matz. And the bench is really strong, I think, at this point. I don't think Adrian Gonzalez is long for this team. He hasn't looked good in spring training. I don't think he's good enough to hold a position for an extended period of time. But Michael Conforto came back a lot faster than I think people expected. And I think this team has enough overall talent to really contend for that second wild card spot. It's certainly not a sure thing, though.
Yeah, I agree with all that. We've talked about the big move versus multiple small moves before, and I just don't know where I land on that just yet because, you know, I get the thinking that if you get one 5-win player, that's better than having 5 1-win players. Obviously, that's true. Yeah. I do feel like there's something to be said about having maybe 2, 2.5 players when your alternatives are just below replacement level. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's certainly a calculus there that you can kind of justify either way. I don't know what side I come down on, but, you know, thinking about it, obviously in a vacuum, you always take the 5-win player over the multiples. But I'm just saying within a team context, sometimes maybe it would make sense to do the other way. But, yeah, I think this is a pretty solid team on paper. I'm interested to see what Brandon Nimmo does this season because he's kind of been hyped. You know,
yeah.
I feel like the StatCast stuff has definitely hyped him up a little bit, and I'm interested to see what he can do of a most days starting role. And I'm also interested to see more Ahmed Rosario because he can fly. And, you know, I just love watching, you know, fast players. I mean, D. Gordon, I mentioned Marte earlier. He can run a little bit. I'm just a fan of watching fast players do their thing, even if they don't necessarily put up big stats. So he's got my attention. And the rotation, I mean, how could you not be interested in this rotation? You know, Syndergaard and DeGrom, one of the best 1-2 punches in baseball, provided they're both healthy. And then Harvey, who knows there, who knows with Matt. And, you know, Seth Lugo is kind of interesting in his own way. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what they do. not really down on this team at all. I don't know if they're going to have enough to get over the hump and be the second wild card, but I can certainly see the path there, and I don't hold it against you for picking them, even if I did call you a homer to begin the segment.
The thing with the Mets is going to be injuries again. I mean, I don't think there's any argument against that. You know, even guys like who aren't very injury prone, like Ahmed Rosario has had some injury issues. But then, you know, will Michael Conforto come back and hit like he did at the beginning of last season? Can Yoenis Cespedes stay on the field for 120 games versus 80? You know, those kinds of things. And then, of course, the rotation injuries. So there's a lot of variance on this team. I think there's less variance than there was before, but there's still a lot.
What do you make of all the interesting new wrinkles that Mickey Callaway has introduced from his Cleveland days, like testing to see if players are hydrated before they take the field for a game or a workout or what have you, and you know, stuff like that. Do you think this is going to actually lead to a tangible improvement for the Mets, or do you think this is sort of eyewash that's not really going to make a difference in the long term?
I don't care. What they were doing before didn't work. So in that case, I'm all for trying new things. I'm sure some of it is eyewash. I would love to see the team take a systematic approach to actually trying to determine if these things are working, which involves putting some effort into evaluation of, you know, some of these little things. And I don't think they'll actually do that. But I think that with the proper people in place and proper evaluative tools, you can actually determine whether or not some of those things are making a difference rather than just like, oh, Yoenis Cespedes had never known before that he was supposed to hydrate regularly and now he is, which is something we're literally hearing sometimes. That's great, but we can also do a little bit better to figure out whether or not that's actually working. Yeah, I think that it'll probably make some positive benefit if it's even if it's just, you know, the placebo effect, but it's impossible to tell at this point.
Speaking of a team who is embracing pop sci approaches, let's talk about the Philadelphia Phillies and their little TED Talk manager, Gabe Kapler. The Phillies actually had an interesting offseason. Early on, they signed Carlos Santana. Then later on, they added Jake Arrieta. In between, they brought back Pat Neshek, who, you know, was pretty good last season. I'm kind of surprised he signed with the Phillies. And also Tommy Hunter, although Hunter will begin the season on the disabled list. But, you know, this team, they're still kind of in a little bit of a rebuild. I think they still have some positions they have to figure out. Obviously, the Scott Kingery extension also should have been mentioned just now, and I apologize to Mr. Kingery for not working him in there. But this is probably one of the most interesting teams in the majors because they are certainly leaps and bounds above where they were this time last year. But I'm not quite sure they're there where I can see them winning the second wild card. I do think they're going to be better than last season. I do think they're going to be far more interesting. I also think there's a chance Gabe Kapler is fired within 12 months. So I'm not joking when I say that, for the
I
record. I
know.
do think there's a chance that this crashes and burns and he is gone within a year's time. And, you know, maybe they install Dusty Baker or someone else. But yeah, this is a potentially interesting squad. So what do you think?
I don't know that there is a team that had as unequivocally good of an offseason as the Phillies. Maybe the Angels. But the Phillies had. I can't argue with a single decision that they made from a front office perspective. I wish Scott Kingery would have made more money on his extension because I think he's awfully good. But he got an extension before he ever took major league hack, which is great for him. You see how well that worked out for John Singleton. The Santana signing I thought was really savvy. I'm not sure about Rhys Hoskins in left field, but he's such a good offensive player, and his broad-based skills, I think, is going to go really well for him. So, I love that deal when it happened for the Phillies. The Jake Arrieta deal, I think, is really smart. Like you said, that Pat Neshek signing is probably an underrated best relief pitcher signing in baseball this year. Tommy Hunter was really good last year, so if he gets healthy, I mean, he's a real big improvement over the bullpen. I just think that they're going to need at least one more year for consolidation of the talent that they already have and the next couple of steps to add those final pieces. This is I really hope, and I don't think this is going to happen, but I really hope the Phillies are the team that gets Manny Machado next year. I think that's the next step for them, is to get a superstar level player, whether it's a Harper or Machado. Maybe Clayton Kershaw wants to move on from the Dodgers. Who knows? I'm just kidding there. That's not happening. But they have some holes. The rotation is not great. They definitely need to see what they have in some of these young players and see if they're really going to be, you know, good regulars or stars or that kind of thing. But I loved the offseason for this team. It's still weird to say that after the Ruben Romero era, but they've made a lot of smart moves over the past 4 or 5 years, even to the end of Amaro's tenure, and they're starting to pay off.
Yeah, and I guess the big question mark outside of what you just mentioned, well, let's say big question marks. One, Franco, is he actually a big league player, or is he just
not really.
Yeah, and two, the rotation. You know, Vince Velasquez was like the hottest thing on earth for what, a 3-start stretch, and now significantly not. And I don't know. I want to see what they do with the rotation a little bit more. I think you're right that they make a lot of sense for Machado or even Harper, but they also make sense for a lot of the free agent starting pitchers who are going to be their next winner.
Yep.
I have to think they're going to get at least one of those guys or trade for someone or something or another, because they need the rotation help. They do have Sixto Sanchez on the way. It's possible he reaches the majors this season. I don't know how aggressive they're going to be there, but possible. And they also have Franklin Colome. Colome? Is that how you say his name?
Colome. I have
honestly no Colome. Okay, that makes way more sense. And he could conceivably also reach the majors this season. So there's some help on the way. And we'll see what they do. But, yeah, it's at least an interesting team now. And there's at least reason to believe they can finish third in this division. Of course, you know, I say that, and yet you know who finished second in this division last year?
Was it the Braves?
It was the Marlins.
Well, you don't have to worry about that this year.
I do not. And I guess this is all setting up to say that the team who finished first in the division last year, the Washington Nationals, are almost certainly, excuse me, is almost certainly going to finish first again this year. Their offseason was fairly quiet. Their biggest additions were probably on the bench. They added Miguel Montero to be Matt Wieter's caddy. And they also have Matt Adams in town now to replace Adam Lynn. They did add Joaquin Benoit in the bullpen, but he is currently hurt. No telling if or when we will see him again. And otherwise, they left this team largely untouched, of course.
They did bring back Howie Kendrick, which I think is an underrated move. Yep. I like that.
Yep, that was a good move. And he's coming in handy right out of the gates because of Daniel Murphy's injury.
Mm-hmm.
So good deal there. But this is a good team. It has a chance to be the best team of a National League, both because of its merits and also because they're going to play the Braves and the Marlins, 36 times or so, and there's a chance they go, you know, who knows? This team against the Marlins, there might be a really lopsided number in that win one loss column there, because that could be ugly, you know, that could be woo. But yeah, I mean realistically, 18 times you match these two teams up, like Max Scherzer is going to strike out 20 Marlins at some point.
It's very possible, especially when you get into September.
Exactly. I mean, if the Nationals, if you told me the Nationals went, let's say, I don't know, maybe 14-4 against the Marlins, I would probably believe that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, baseball is not a sport where you should ever project something like that. But absolutely, I would agree with that. This is it.
Yeah.
This is the year for the Nationals. Like, I know that they have enough young talent, especially to continue to be a good team past 2018. But it's the last year of Bryce Harper's contract. It's the last year of Daniel Murphy's contract. It's the last year of Gio Gonzalez's contract. This is it. If this team, they did not have an aggressive start to the offseason, and that's okay. I had put them on Wade Davis because I think their bullpen still needs help. But Sean Doolittle's pretty good. Ryan Madsen's pretty good. They still have holes that they can fill. AJ Cole's going to be the number 5 starter to start the season. The outfield still has Michael Taylor, who's not all that great, but Victor Robles is on the way. They do have some other young talent who can fill in. And if I'm the Nationals, I'm looking at July 31st and saying, who's the ace I can get? Who's the big time reliever I can get? how can we get to 100 wins and how can we make our team the best it can possibly be for the World Series, because they've had such a run of just disappointing in the playoffs. And yeah, the playoffs are a crapshoot. You can only do so much, but they've really got to go hard after it this year, because I'm really worried about what 2019 then could look like if they don't make the most of their year this year.
That's fair. I would say, though, just to play devil's advocate, that there might not be a lower leverage number five starter situation on a contender than what the Nationals are facing. Because, you know, once you get to the postseason, it's going to be Scherzer, Strasburg, Gonzalez, and Roark if they need a fourth starter. Now, granted, this team always seems to get hurt right before the postseason, and it's possible that Strasburg is out or what have you. And then, you know, you do need that fourth starter or fifth starter, as it may be. But I don't know. I think the Cole thing, I'm not a big fan. I don't think he's going to be very good. At the same time, I don't think it's going to matter for them. I don't think it's going to come into play either during the regular season or the postseason. And I don't know. I think their bullpen is probably a little bit better than you do think. Doolittle, Madsen, Kinsler, Romero, that's fine. I would like to see that. I mean, of course they're going to add a bullpen arm of the deadline. And, you know, I'd be interested to see if they can land JT Realmuto before the deadline or some other upgrade behind the plate. I mean, maybe a reunion with Wilson Ramos makes sense if he shows he's healthy and can produce, you know, something like that. Because, yeah, they certainly could use the help there. And, you know, we'll see how long it takes before they throw Robles in center field. And once they do that, I mean, Robles, he's a pretty interesting talent, and that could make this team look a fair amount better. And they're already pretty good looking. So,
I agree with you completely. I feel like Robles might be one of those guys who takes a little bit more time to mature given his skill set. Yeah, the speed is going to play day one. The defense is going to play day one. I wonder if he'll have a little bit more trouble with some of the offensive adjustments and making contact in the majors, dealing with off-speed stuff, like real, legitimate off-speed stuff. But you don't see too much of that in the National League East anyway, like other than a couple of the Mets starters and maybe Julio Teheran. You're not going to be really just beaten up by guys breaking balls in the National League East. He's really good. And, you know, between him and Turner and Rendon to some extent, you got Strasburg and Scherzer who are in for the long haul. It's not like this team's going to completely fall apart after 2018, even if Harper and Gonzalez and Murphy all pack their bags and walk.
No. No, not at all. And I think, I guess what I would say is the most interesting development outside of Harper for this club over the next year is what they do with Mike Rizzo, because I think he's one of the best general managers in baseball. And it's a little concerning to me that they have not given him an extension yet, because if he were to walk, I mean, there's, what, five teams who shouldn't be trying to get him as their general manager? Maybe, you know, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Dodgers, maybe the Cardinals. I don't know. Beyond that, I feel like, oh, the Astros probably at this point. And, yeah, beyond that, the Indians, I don't know. I would just say, like, if Mike Rizzo becomes a free agent this winter, there's probably 15 to 20 teams who should be calling about him taking over their department, and that's maybe conservative.
Yeah, I think that we might be in a position with the Nationals where they, and I'm using air quotes, the ownership group says that they, quote, have to rebuild after 2018 if they don't go strong into the playoffs and maybe come out of this with a National League pennant or a World Series win. It wouldn't surprise me at all, given how much money they've spent over the last few years, for ownership to pull back and say, okay, we're going to let Rizzo walk, we'll let Harper walk, we'll let Murphy walk, and maybe we'll trade away one of our starting pitchers that's really good and cut back on payroll and, you know, settle into this 80-win territory for a little while because we want to recoup a little bit of our investment.
That would be disappointing, Ryan, for multiple reasons.
Yeah. It would be incredibly disappointing unless you're, you know, a Phillies fan or a Mets fan or something. But I also don't think it's outside the realm of possibility.
Wow, we ended this one on a really sad note. I thought, oh, we're going to end with the Nationals. It's going to be very upbeat. We're going to be like, this is a good team. This is the year. David Martinez is bringing camels in. There's a chance he's going to bring some penguins in and all kinds of other wildlife. We're going to get it funky in the Capitol. And instead, you're like, they might settle for being a second or third place team. And
wait a second, we should be incredibly upbeat about the 2018 Nationals. I don't know that once Robles comes up, there's going to be a more fun team to watch. If you're hitting Robles eighth or ninth and Trey Turner first or second and Bryce Harper and Anthony Rendon and Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer pitching, I cannot think of many teams I would rather see take the field every day. You should be so lucky to live in Washington and get to see these guys on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the fortunate things about living here. I am about 30 to 40 minutes away from both Camden Yards and Nationals Park. So I get to experience the Harper Machado Armageddon on multiple fronts. I also get to experience, you know, expiring GM contracts. So it's an interesting time. But yeah, fun little group of players up here, and hopefully this is their year, because I really would like to see this team at least win a playoff series during Harper's reign. Can you imagine having Bryce Harper and not winning a playoff series for his entire team control?
Sadly, I can. And it won't surprise me at all if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you're a Mets and Jaguars fan, so I don't think you can imagine most of the world's sporting pain.
Well,
so fair
I mean,
enough.
You know, you look at some of these other players like poor Andrew McCutchen and things like that. So yeah, I can certainly see this happening and going in a very dark path. I don't think it will. I have a good feeling about the Nationals this year. I've said that for the last 3 years, but I do think that they have a really good chance, as good a chance as they've ever had, of being the team that comes out of the National League this year. And I think the Dodgers are vulnerable. I think the Cubs are even a little vulnerable. And this seems like, even though they're not like the Pocota projected 97-win team that they once were a couple of seasons ago, they might be the team to beat in the National League, which is really saying something.
Yeah. At minimum, they're one of the teams to beat, so they have a chance at it.
I also think that there is, even if they won the World Series this year, Bryce Harper is out. He is not going back to Washington. So enjoy him while you've got him, Nationals fans.
He's a Mets fan, fellas. Fellas, everyone listening, he is a Mets fan.
I mean, yeah.
Ladies, fellas. Wow. That was you're so depressing on this one, Brian. Very depressing.
Look,
on this national segment.
Let me live my dream of the Harper, Upton, Trout outfield in Los Angeles. Let me live that dream.
You don't want that, though. You don't want that. Because think about how annoying that would be.
What?
Think about how annoying that would be, though.
For
to
who?
Have all those good outfielders in one spot. I mean, didn't we all get annoyed with the Miami Marlins? Didn't they do a humanitarian thing by dismantling that talent
outfield?
Oh, yeah,
and putting together the Judge Stanton outfield in New York. Everyone's so upset about that, aren't they?
Actually, I will say Harper and Trout playing on one team would be very fun, especially when you throw Ohtani into the mix. That would be,
I mean,
oh, man.
Can you imagine going to BP there? That would be just the most unbelievable thing.
That would be the easiest copy team in the world.
Oh, for
That'd
sure.
Be, it wouldn't matter what they did. You would always have like a Maris Mantle storyline inbuilt there. You'd always have like, oh, is Harper jealous because of Trout's attention or something? Like that
and
is
the different personalities. It'd be Jeter, A-Rod all over again, except hopefully much better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's – well,
I don't think that's – by the way, I do not actually believe that that's what would happen at all. I, as much as I love the ideas of the super outfields that people have been talking about, like Harper in New York with the Yankees and Harper in Los Angeles, I could not possibly imagine those things happening.
Right. It's going to be a super infield in D.C. when Chris Bryant decides to join his longtime pal Bryce Harper in the nation's capital. And you're going to have Rendon. You're going to have Bryant, you're going to have Zimmerman, I guess. I don't know. Chris Bryant, I guess, would play second base or shortstop in this arrangement. Hey, if we're going all out, let's go all out.
Let's do that. But let's save it for another episode. This one's run long as it is. RJ, thanks so much for taking the time to talk this through. Happy opening day. And we look forward to reading your stuff at CBS Sports MLB all season long.
Do we, Brian?
We do. We deeply, deeply and truly do. The same way that we are looking forward to having you read the transaction analysis columns at Baseball Prospectus this year. We'll throw out a quick announcement here. The transaction analysis beat is getting a new writer, which is very exciting for us. Patrick Dubuque will be joining me on the transaction analysis beat this year. So if you follow Patrick's work at all, you know that it's really, really excellent. And he probably will now be the best person writing about transaction analysis at Baseball Prospectus. So we're really lucky to have him.
Well, he's the best writer to ever do transaction analysis at BP just by default, because he is one of the best writers BP's ever employed in terms of, technical skills and creativity and all that. So that's actually pretty cool. I like Patrick a lot.
We couldn't be more excited about that. So that's something for all of you DFA fans to look forward to. We'll also force him to come on the podcast, I think, once in a while and replace me as would be appropriate. But yeah, you can find all sorts of stuff at Baseball Prospectus with the start of the season. Check out the DFA podcast on Twitter at DFA podcast. Check us out. We are on Blog Talk Radio if you want to go directly to the source to find our streams, but we post our shows regularly at BP, where there's tons of other great content as well. So check it out. If you have any questions for us, it's DFA at baseballprospectus.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you think of the show. But until next time, happy baseball, happy opening day, and we will talk to you again soon.